wrote in collaboration with Tirtha Biswas, Jim Fine, and Nikki Cameron. So there's been a lot of interest recently in constructing string theoretic models of inflation. We've heard about some of that already at this workshop. And there are currently a number of interesting possible scenarios for how inflation from string theory could have taken place. Of course, this is an incomplete list, and I apologize to anyone whose favorite model I left off. I think when you're engaged in this kind of model building, it's interesting to look for some distinctively stringy features in the inflationary dynamics, or better yet, distinctively stringy observational signatures that could allow you, at least in principle, to distinguish in between string theory models of inflation and more conventional field theoretic counterparts. And for the most part, this is difficult to do. And part of the reason this is difficult is because in most of these examples, what people do is they use string theory to derive some kind of a low energy effective action describing dynamics well below the string scale. And then all the inflationary predictions are made in the context of that low energy effective action. So this is an example field theory that's been used to study brain inflation frequently in the literature. Of course, that's a perfectly valid approach. I have nothing against that. However, we know string theory is supposed to provide a complete description of the dynamics, also at very high energies. And so it may be interesting to see if we can construct inflationary models that take advantage of this very distinctive feature. And perhaps those kinds of inflationary models would have some novel dynamics and novel predictions for the CNB. Now, ordinarily, this sort of proposition would be daunting, since any field theory description like this would need to be supplemented by infinitely many high-dimension operators. And obviously, in general, you don't know the explicit form of the infinite series of high-dimension operators. But there are some sort of toy model examples where you do have a handle on what the full series of high-dimension operators is supposed to look like. And one example that I'll come back to throughout the talk is this p-adic string theory. This is a toy model of the bosonic string, where the world sheet coordinates are taken to be valued on a field of p-adic numbers instead of real numbers. And it turns out that when you make that substitution, you can compute all amplitudes for the tachyonic state in this theory. And then you can write down a fairly simple field theory type Lagrangian that reproduces that infinite series of amplitudes. And the action that you get looks like that. And the thing to notice is this e to the box type kinetic operator, which you can understand as an infinite series expansion in powers of box. So this theory contains not only infinitely many high dimension operators, but infinitely many derivatives acting on the tachyon field. And so from the perspective of a cosmologist, this may be an interesting playground to play around with what string cosmology might look like to all orders in alpha prime. So I'll give away the punchline right now. What I'm going to show is that we can embed inflation into a general class of high derivative theories with the non-local structure of the theory is going to be encoded in this kinetic function f of box. So this sort of prototype model is sufficiently general to include the p-adic string that I wrote down earlier. But it also includes a number of examples that you could derive from various string field constructions. And I'll
get an infinite number of initial conditions.
I'm getting there. So and I'll give away the punchline also for what the novelties are. It'll turn out that we can realize slow roll inflation in a theory like this, even when naively the potential is too steep to admit slow roll inflation. Moreover, there's a predictive scenario. I'll show that we generically get a large non-Gaussianity in the CNB. And this first point, I think, is sort of interesting because it turns out that flat potentials are really surprisingly difficult to obtain in realistic string theory scenarios. So the focus is going to be on cosmology, but before I get to that, I want to talk about some of the problems and complications that arise when you work with these kinds of high derivative theories. And for the most part, this is fairly well known. You often get classical instabilities or else ghosts in the quantum theory that violate unitarity. In the case that you have infinitely many derivatives, you may wonder whether any sense can be made of the initial value problem at all. And I think it should be clear that any application of this kind of theory to physics, not just inflation or cosmology or whatever, but any application needs to address the issues about when these theories can be ghost-free and when you can make sense of the initial value problem. So before I talk about cosmology and these kinds of theories, I want to make a little detour and discuss some of these issues. So it's fairly well known that adding finitely many high derivative corrections almost always gets you into trouble. And I'm going to illustrate the kind of trouble you can get into with this Lee-Wick model, which is basically just a Klein-Gordon theory with an extra box squared correction. And the thing that's not entirely trivial about this theory is it's actually a theory of two physical states, not one. And the way to see that is to notice that the extra box squared term gives you a P4 correction in the denominator of the propagator. So now the propagator actually has two poles corresponding to the fact that this is a theory of two physical states. And you can see that more explicitly by doing a kind of partial fractions decomposition. So you get an ordinary looking propagator for the light field, and then you get something that looks almost like an ordinary Lincoln propagator for the heavy field. But the crucial thing that happens is you always get a relative minus sign between these two terms. And what the relative minus sign is telling you is that one of these two states, and in this case it turns out to be the heavier one, is being propagated with long sign kinetic term in the Lagrangian. So this carries negative kinetic energy. It's a ghost-like excitation, and it renders the Hamiltonian unbounded from below. So the system is generically unstable. So that's the problem that tends to come up. And I illustrated that with the Lee-Wick model, but actually the problem is extremely general. So if you take some action that depends on phi, box phi, and so on, going up to box n of phi, then generically the following counting follows. N tells you the number of poles in the propagator, because the inverse propagator is an nth order polynomial in p squared. Number of poles in the propagator tells you how many states are in the theory. You get two initial data per state, because those are the two free coefficients that turn into annihilation creation operators in the canonical quantization picture. And of course, the number of initial data is the same as the dimension of the classical phase space. And there's a theorem due to Mr. Ostrogradsky going back to like the 1800s that the Hamiltonian for a theory like this is essentially always unbounded from below, except in the local case n equals 1, which is more or less the end of the story for finite n. But actually, finite n isn't what I was interested in to begin with. The kinds of examples that I was interested in were these theories coming from string theory, where f of x is not some finite order polynomial, but actually it's a full transcendental function. So the new and novel thing that comes up in this case is that the equation of motion is an infinite order partial differential equation. And clearly, from this sort of chain of equalities, the stability of the Hamiltonian and the number of states in the theory is crucially related, intimately related, to the number of initial data that you need to impose to uniquely specify a solution. So clearly, the crucial question that you need to answer is how many initial data does an equation like this require? And it's not entirely trivial to answer, because infinite order equations are fundamentally different from the kinds of finite order equations that we're used to dealing with in physics. In fact, it's fairly easy to see that these have much more in common with integral equations than they do with the sort of second order equations that you're used to. So if you want to answer this in any sort of generality, then you need to give some formal treatment of the initial value problem for infinite order partial differential equations, which is what I did with Nikki Cameron. Nikki is a mathematician, by the way. And we gave a systematic prescription for how to count initial data in a broad class of infinite order theories. And we gave a rigorous study of these sort of function of the derivative operators. Mathematicians call these pseudo-differential operators. So I don't want to go through all the details of the math. Instead, what I'm going to do is sort of hand-wavingly show you why it can be that infinite order equations could still admit finitely many data, because it's not entirely obvious. And so to illustrate that, I just want to talk about this really trivial theory where I assume that the kinetic function factorizes into box minus m squared, and I put the high derivatives in this gamma of box, and I'll assume that that's arbitrary, but it has no zeros. The equation of motion that you get looks like this, and it really does have infinitely many derivatives, but of course the propagator only has one pole, which is essentially by fiat. It's because I demanded that gamma have no zeros. So if the propagator has one pole, then intuitively there's only one physical excitation in the theory, and so there should be only two data, which are the two free coefficients that turn into annihilation creation operators in the quantum theory. And so the Ostrogradsky construction in the most naive form doesn't apply. And of course, that's the really heuristic hand-waving version. What Nikki and I did is rather more sophisticated than that. We were able to prove a theorem that this kind of pole counting completely exhausts all allowed initial data, which means that single pole theories can be ghost-free. And what's much less obvious, I think, is that even certain kinds of multipole theories can be okay. And moreover, this formalism of the pseudo-differential operators gives sort of a cute way of projecting the ghosts out of theories that are otherwise pathological. So having gotten through this sort of formalism that I wanted to talk about, I'm now going to show you how we actually embedded inflation into these kinds of theories. So I'll focus again on this sort of prototype non-local theory that I've been talking about, and we will assume that the potential has an unstable maximum somewhere, and I'm going to look for inflationary solutions rolling away from the unstable maximum, which I'll put at phi equals zero down to the minimum of the theory. So in the string theory examples like p-adic string and SFT that I mentioned earlier, this corresponds to looking for inflation during brain decay. So before I show you how we construct solutions, I want to quickly show you sort of how we don't construct solutions. So naively, you might say, well, during inflation, the inflaton is almost constant, so its derivatives are small, and the high derivatives are smaller still. And so naively, you would say, well, During inflation, it must be a good approximation to throw away the high derivative corrections and just approximate this by a local field theory. And if you did that, then you would conclude that inflation only works when this naive mass scale that appears in the potential is small compared to the Hubble scale, because that's the thing that keeps data small. And of course, that's true. That's one way to obtain inflation in this theory. But I'm going to argue that that's not the only way to obtain inflation in this theory. And in fact, we have working examples where you can still obtain slow-roll inflation, even though this sort of naive eta parameter is large compared to one. And in passing, I want to mention this sort of naive approach is close to the approach that most models are really using. And so I'm not, of course, arguing that those are wrong, but perhaps this means inflation is a little easier to get in string theory than you might have thought. So in order to show how this works, I'm just going to look at dynamics very close to the unstable maximum. So phi is close to zero. I can throw out the phi cubed and higher interactions and just focus on the field theory. And incidentally, we don't rely on throwing out those interaction terms. It's just the easiest way to see this effect. So the equation of motion that you get looks like this, where here mu squared is the mass scale appearing in the potential. And notice that you can solve that by taking phi to be an eigenfunction of box, and that solves the full equation as long as the eigenvalue omega squared satisfies this transcendental equation, which is telling you that the dynamics of the inflaton field is actually being set by this derived effective mass scale, omega squared, that may be related in a non-trivial way to the naive mass scale that was actually appearing in the potential. And of course, the interesting possibility is that you choose f of box in such a way that the effective mass is small, even though the naive mass is large. So this gives you some sort of mechanism for stretching out the inflaton potential and relaxing the eta problem in Hilltop inflationary models. So there, as long as you stay very, very close to the unstable maximum, you can think about the dynamics in two ways. You can think about this as a theory with a steep potential and a strong force, but infinitely many derivatives. And so even though the inflaton feels a strong force, these high derivatives conspire to slow down its motion. Or equivalently, as long as you're very close to the maximum, you can think about this as this sort of dual local field theory, where the height of the false vacuum is the same, but now the curvature of the potential has been stretched out by the effect of the kinetic energy. So the first implementation of this idea was in the context of that p-adic string theory that I wrote down earlier. This is what the action looks like. It turns out that slow roll inflation proceeds in the regime where the non-local structure of the theory is playing a very important role in the dynamics, which turns out to mean p large compared to 1. We have examples where slow roll persists even when naively the eta parameter is something like 10 to the 11. And if you go through the details, you find the spectral index is less than 1, which is in good agreement with the recent WMAP. The scalar-tensor ratio, no, it's dialable. Scalar-tensor ratio is undetectably small, which is typical for a Hilltop model. The string scale is below the 4D Planck mass, which is a good thing for convectifying. And of course, the most interesting prediction is for large non-Gaussianity in the CMB. So in order to talk about the effect of non-Gaussianity, I want to start adding interaction terms. When I was talking previously, I just focused on the free theory, and now I'm going to add the leading interaction near phi equals 0, which is a cubic term with coupling G. And the interesting thing that happens when you do this is that once you start to turn on this interaction term, this sort of duality between local and non-local models starts to break down in a very interesting way. So before I show you how we actually did the calculation, I want to just hand-wavingly argue about why you should expect the non-Gaussianity to be big in a model like this. So for the sake of this hand-waving argument, let's just ignore gravitational perturbations. Then the three-point function, which is proportional to the non-linearity parameter, is just going to be proportional to G, because that's the thing that controls the strength of the interactions in this theory. So obviously, if I make G really big, then I make the bispectrum really big, and I make FNL big. That's a completely trivial thing that I'm saying. What I'm saying is you make the interactions strong, and then you make the non-Gaussianity big. That's trivial, and it would be true in a local field theory, too. But here's the thing. In a local field theory, if you made the interactions big, you would also make the potential steep, and you would screw up the slow roll dynamics of the background. But remember, in our models, we're not relying on the flatness of the potential to get slow roll inflation. We're relying on the wonky structure in the kinetic term. So in our models, there's really no problem with having slow roll inflation, even when the potential is steep and the interactions are strong. And so we can generate large FNL just by having a huge cubic coupling, and that's in some sense trivial. The thing that's non-trivial is that doing that doesn't screw up the dynamics of the background. So if I phrase it that way, it perhaps sounds a little bit contrived, but actually it comes out fairly naturally in the p-adic case. In p-adic inflation, this G turns out to go like P squared. The Kobe normalization demands that P is somewhere around 10 to the 13, at least when G string is order 1. And so this cubic coupling typically is large, at least in the p-adic model. So now I'll show you how we actually did the calculation. So I'm going to assume again that the kinetic function factorizes into box minus m squared in this gamma of box, and I'll assume it has no zeros. Because gamma has no zeros, I can put it in non-local field redefinitions, and I can do this particular one that moves it out of the kinetic term and into the interactions. And so in this field basis, at the free field theory level, you just have a usual sort of canonical kinetic term, and all the non-local stuff has been shifted into the interactions. So clearly, this is the appropriate starting point for matching on to the usual cosmological perturbation theory calculation. And for technical reasons, it turns out it's easiest to use the Cyrie et al. Formalism for working straight with the field equations. So for us, the starting point is the canonical field equation in this basis. For Gaussian perturbations, the nonlinearity and also the non-locality in this basis doesn't matter at all. You just get the usual equation you would have in slow roll inflation. Solutions are well known. You have some angle functions. And then at second order is where interesting things start to happen. Here the non-locality comes in through these non-local source terms acting on the first order perturbation. So I know how to solve this equation. All I need to do is stick the solution in here and act on it with these pseudo-differential operators in order to compute the source term for the second order perturbation. And when you go through the details, what you find is a non-local structure in the source term tends to mimic the effect of having had a huge cubic coupling. And it leads to big FNL in exactly the same way that having had a big cubic coupling would have. But again, the novelty is that this huge effective cubic coupling doesn't screw up the slow roll dynamics of the background. So we did the calculation in a general context. Two more slides. We computed FNL for this general sort of prototype non-local field theory. Here I've specified to the case of p-adic inflation, and I've plotted FNL on equilateral triangles as a function of g-string for some different model parameters. This horizontal line is the central value of the Yadevin-Vondolt claim detection. This is plus and minus one sigma. And the thing to notice is that for natural values of g-string, sort of one part in 10, we reproduce the central value of the Yadevin-Vondolt detection. And of course, you can interpret that as you like and make of that what you will. And in the meantime, I will conclude. So the study of these kinds of high derivative theories, I think, is well motivated from string field theory. And you can also motivate these constructions in other ways if you don't like string theory for some reason. For a cosmologist, I think it's interesting because it gives you some playground for studying what string cosmology might look like to all orders in alpha prime. The novel features that arise are slow roll, even when the potential is naively too steep. As well as large non-Gaussianity in the CMB, which is a very distinctive prediction. At the formal level, I think these are kind of fun theories to play around with because there's a rich mathematical structure associated with these pseudo-differential equations and a large body of mathematical literature that's not well known in the physics community. Phenomenologically, I think the interesting possibility is trying to realize the same kind of phenomenon in a more realistic string theory where you worry also about moduli stabilization and compactification, and where you can worry about the details of reheating and where the standard model is supposed to live and so on and so forth. And in this regard, I think the neat thing about this is that the effect, the prediction relies in a very fundamental way on having kept the full infinite series of high derivatives. It doesn't work when you truncate it at some finite order. And so it relies in a fundamental way on the UV completion. So this is a scenario with a CMB is really probing extremely high energy physics and is probing some distinctively stringy phenomena. So I will stop.
A couple of questions?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that Carl Bender and I have shown that actually higher derivative theories, even finite order, don't have ghosts in the first place. And I'll talk about it in the immediately after the break.
Okay. The Ostrogradsky thing is just a purely classical statement about checking the boundaries of the Hamiltonian. So that's all stuff for that.
The real issue is the minus sign in the propagator doesn't mean that there's a ghost. That's the point we'll discuss.
As you mentioned, the coupling normalization requires the p equals 10 to 13. It's much larger than unity, as you mentioned. Is that so?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
The coupling normalization sets the value of p.
Well, it actually sets the ratio of g string to p squared or something like that. Ah. So taking p to the 14 is assuming g string is order 1. There's two regimes where it works. If you make p order 1,
then the eigenvector structure is not very important in the dynamics, and it just looks like a normal inflationary model. So I'm pushing it into the regime of the parameter space where it's most interesting. Mm-hmm. But that's the natural regime because G string should be too small.
Are you very sensitive to, essentially, it seems a bit like you might be moving a tuning of the potential into a tuning of the kinetic curve and sort of switching the normal and renormalizing your field to sort of decrease what the potential is. But are you very sensitive to what the form of the kinetic curve is?
Yeah, so it's, yeah, that's true. There's a tuning that goes into the kinetic function. I mean, the generic, how to put this? Yes, is the answer. It's just a novel way of looking at this picture. So it's not necessarily a generic feature. We could have kinetic functions that make the effective mass heavier, or we could make it lighter, or I could make it the same.
Right. And maybe just
let's postpone the first part of the discussion.
We should talk about.